This is Patriots Draft Countdown, presented by Bud Light.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
Hosted by the writers of Patriots.com. From now until you hear
the New England Patriots light,
the countdown is on. Welcome to the Patriots Draft Countdown, presented by Bud Light.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Patriots Draft Countdown, presented by Bud Light. Easy to drink, easy to enjoy. Bud Light, the official beer sponsor of the New England Patriots. And today we're going to be touching on a number of topics, all related to the draft. We've got a great offensive line preview. Evan had a chance to sit down and talk with Brandon Thorne, really drill down on some of those offensive line prospects. But first here in this first segment, we're just going to kind of catch everybody up on some of the latest news that's happened over the last week since the last episode, relating directly to the Patriots and how it impacts their draft. So guys, want to start at the top. Justin Fields, he is now a Pittsburgh Steeler. So we know we spent a lot of time talking over the last few months about Justin Fields' potential to come here. Now he's kind of off the table. To start with you, Paul, you know, what was kind of your reaction to that, and how do you think that – does that impact the Patriots at all?
Yeah, I mean, I would say personally, just, you know, very selfishly, I'm glad that he got moved to somebody so we could sort of stop with – like, to me, when they signed Jacoby Brissett, that kind of eliminated the Justin Fields portion of the Patriots' connection to that possibility. But the questions were persisting, so I'm glad it kind of got resolved. I'm not overly surprised. I think if you saw it, like, you know, Chicago had made it clear that they were looking to deal him. They wanted to do right by him and move him as quickly as they could, and it took a while. So that told me that there wasn't a tremendous amount of interest. Now, they also, people around the league, if you're interested in Justin Fields, you knew Chicago was going to have to release him at some point if they weren't able to make a deal. So that lowers the value. You know, a conditional pick, if he plays for Pittsburgh, it's a fourth-round pick. If he doesn't, it's a sixth-round pick. So I think it's probably the best for Chicago and Fields. Pittsburgh specifically, I know we're not necessarily caring about Pittsburgh. I think it makes a little sense because I'm not sold on Russell Wilson, and I know they've said that it's Russell Wilson's job, but we'll see.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense for Pittsburgh because they have the 20th pick in the draft, so they're not going to have an opportunity to take a Jaden Daniels or a Drake May or one right. of these guys. So their upside play is Justin Fields, which I think makes sense for a team like that. But clearly, teams like the Commanders, teams like the Patriots, teams like the Minnesota Vikings, they didn't have much interest in Justin Fields because they were more worried about the guys in the draft. And you're talking about contract and value and things like that. Justin Fields coming up in his fourth year. He's going to have to get paid at some point, even if he is starting caliber, versus starting all over first year of a rookie contract. Now you have team control for the next 5 years. It's a much different scenario. So I get it for a team like Pittsburgh. I never really got it for a team like the Patriots that had that pick to be able to take a quarterback in the draft and basically do what people would want you to do with Justin Fields, which is develop him and hope that you can tap into the upside. So makes sense that he's not coming here. Makes sense for Pittsburgh. I think the Justin Fields too, and Justin Fields and Marvin Harrison Jr. pairing that everybody called in and emailed in. Sorry, RIP to that take.
That was me.
Teed you right up for it.
No, part of me is a little upset. I've always been a Justin Fields guy. I'm surprised how cheap he ended up going to Pittsburgh for. But as Paul said, I'm kind of happy this is done with. It's fun to, like, you know, picture what could have happened, but it's done. He's in Pittsburgh. I'll be upset about it, but I'll get over it. So
that's it. Just some clarity, though, as we get into this last month. It's like, you know, I mean, my favorite part of the draft usually is the day after the draft when they're like, here's the 10 guys that you have, and you can just kind of focus on those instead of doing all this speculation. So that speculation is now out, so I'm glad about that. But the Patriots did make a move this weekend, signing K.J. Osborne, receiver, kind of the third receiver there in Minnesota. We know they missed out on Calvin Ridley, really, you know, coming in with a big offer, kind of showing, I think, that this, you know, regime understands that you got to take a big swing on those kind of players. But they're settling for K.J. Osborne, who kind of himself settles into a group, Paul, that it kind of looks similar to me. You know, it's K.J. Osborne, it's Kendrick Bourne, it's a lot of those kind of, not a big outside X guy, a lot of these guys that you can kind of move around in the slot. We'll see how it all plays out, but I think they've got 9 receivers on the roster.
Yeah, throw DeMario Douglas in there too, and I agree. And listen, he's been, you know, I would say a professional receiver. I think he's been reasonably productive in Minnesota, so I don't think this is a move like you just like scoff at. But you do wonder, you know, where those outside guys, the guys that Evan's been talking about for the last couple of weeks, those X receivers, where they're going to come from. Mike Williams is still, you know, available. It's kind of a strange story about him with the Jets. You know, coming out over the last couple of days. But I like Osborne. I think it's a good addition. I think create more competition. You know, it's some insurance if Kendrick Bourne doesn't, you know, bounce back, you know, from the torn ACL as quickly and as well as everybody hopes. So, you know, bring him in, create some competition. You need a lot of receivers in camp. Yeah. Those guys run a lot in camp.
I'm going to tee up, Evan, just because what do you think this does to affect their draft needs? Because you've talked a lot about it. Paul just mentioned you talking about it. The need for an outside X. They got rid of Devontae Parker, who pretty much played that role last year. I look at this roster. I don't see anybody on it. So would you say going into the draft that we don't really need to spend time thinking about these Z kind of receivers? Let's focus on guys that could potentially be an X.
Yeah, I would say yes, but at the same time, I would hate to pigeonhole yourself just to one type of receiver because that's what it looks like on paper you're missing. The Patriots need talent at that position. So if they grade out Ladd McConkey as a much better player than Keon Coleman, then they should draft Ladd McConkey. They shouldn't draft Keon Coleman. You figure it out down the road. But you look at some of these receivers in that X mold, some guys that are probably going to go in the first round. Obviously, we know about Marvin Harrison Jr., Roma Dunze, those guys off the top of the draft. Then you go to the Brian Thomas Jr.'s, the A.D. Mitchell tier, that sort of next wave. Keon Coleman, to me, is somewhere in the middle between the next wave on day two and the first round guys. And then you'd see some of those probably round three picks, like a Tez Walker, like a Brennan Rice, who I know a lot of people like because of the lineage and everything like that. So I think all those guys are interesting for different reasons. I'm not the biggest fan of Coleman. Gives me too many N'Keal Harry vibes with, you know, no separation, contested catch type of guy. I really do like Brendan Rice a lot, not just because his father's Jerry Rice, but just watching him on film, explosive guy, can run routes as an X, bigger guy, can win contested catches, but also seems to be able to get separation on slants, in breakers, things like that. So there's some guys there. And then obviously, just quickly, Tez Walker pairing him with Drake May, his college quarterback, maybe they go that direction.
How's that work for you, Tez?
I would love it. I would love it. I need something that moves the needle. KJ Osborne. It's just tough. We missed out on Ridley. Keenan Allen left, and it's like, oh, here's KJ Osborne. Like, I don't know. We need something. So
no, I just met the whole college quarterback receiver.
I would love that. I would love that.
Yeah, Tez Walker scares me.
He's lining it up for you.
He scares me a little bit. I'm not going to lie. I think part of it is because of the offense that he played in at North Carolina. It's an air raid system. So a lot of his reps are just him running by people in a straight line. And those types of guys always give me concern because they don't have a lot of branches on the route tree yet. You know, is he going to be able to run three different levels of routes? Senior Bowl was not a good week for him either. So as much as I love the idea of taking the college quarterback and pairing him with his number one receiver, there are some concerns with Tez Walker on film that you are a little bit hesitant. Maybe third or fourth round would be good value, but I'm probably not taking him inside the top 50.
If you take someone in the third or the fourth, as Deuce said, we have nine receivers on the roster. That's pretty open competition for me. So if you're a rookie coming in, like, this is your chance to do it. So
Well, I mean, one more question though is usually, you know, we talk about the X receiver. These are the big dogs, right? These are the guys that, you know, don't need help. They can get off the line. They can get off press. Is it too much to kind of hope to develop a guy like that? Not quite as crazy as like a quarterback. Like usually if you're in a quarterback day two, day three, it's a developmental guy. You're probably not having high hopes that this guy is going to be a star. But is it unreasonable to kind of hope that you could take a guy like that in the middle of the draft and that he will develop into a legit outside presence that draws coverage and attention from defenses?
I mean, I think it's probably case by case, but I don't think it's unreasonable to expect. I mean, whatever the style of receiver, we've seen a lot of guys over the last 5-7 years not necessarily be those blue chip guys in the first round, really develop into weapons in the NFL. I mean, I have to do a little more research to see how many of those guys are strictly outside guys as opposed to slot guys. But, you know, the names everybody knows, you know, Puka Nacua as a fifth-round pick last year, you know, comes in and he looks like a seasoned veteran from, you know, week one. Yeah. Did a lot of that, by the way, without Cooper Kupp early in the year when Kupp was injured. So he didn't even have the luxury of, you know, KJ Osborne, there's probably a thought in your mind that, well, he was playing with Justin Jefferson and even a little like last year with Jordan Addison, who had a really good rookie year. How good is he, or is he just benefiting from open space? Kind of, you know, a makeshift Juju Smith-Schuster thing with Kansas City from the year before. I think he's probably a little bit better than that, not just a product of the guys he was around, but that, you know, that's something you have to keep in mind when you watch some of these guys in college, too. But I think you can develop. Why can't you develop a guy? I absolutely think you can.
Yeah, when you said that about KJ Osborne, there's a touchdown of his last year where they just ran what's called scissors, just two crossing routes like this, and three guys go to Justin Jefferson, and he's just all alone in the corner of the end zone by himself.
I'm open.
And I was like, all right, well, we got the guy that can catch it when he's all alone in the end zone, but who's the guy that's taking three guys with him in the coverage, right? And that's what we're all talking about. That's what Matisse was talking about. And I think some of these guys in the draft, the good thing is that some of these day two guys, especially early day two guys, probably would be first round picks in different drafts. This draft is so loaded at the receiver position that if you were to put some of these players in last year's draft class, then a lot of those guys would be in the conversation with a Zay Flowers, a Quentin Johnson, a Jaxon Smith-Njigba. They're all in that same tier. So 34 is a nice pick to have, because if some of those guys slip through the cracks, that you might have a really, really high grade on, but they don't end up going in the first round, you're going to have that opportunity at the top of the second round, or even to trade in late first round to grab one of those guys. I'll mention one more name who I don't know if he's necessarily going to be a prototypical X, but Xavier Leggett from South Carolina is rising extremely quickly and had a great combine. 221 pounds, ran a sub 4.4 at 221, 6'2", 221. He can really move. I think he's like a cross prospect-wise between A.J. Brown and Debo. He's like right in the middle. He's more natural receiver than Debo, but he's not quite as big and stocky as A.J. Brown. So he's like right in the middle of those two guys, and he had a great season last year at South Carolina. So those types of guys, like a Leggett, that are explosive, good with the ball in their hands, you know, chess pieces that you can move around the formation. I could see those types of guys developing into what we're all looking for at the next level. Maybe not as we get into the Tez Walkers, the Brendan Rices, that tier. Those guys are probably just, this is my role and I'm going to play it type of guys. But there are some guys at the top of the second round that are intriguing that could fit in terms of drawing coverage and being that big time coverage dictator.
You got anybody teach you? What do you want? You want that X receiver.
I know.
No,
I'm a big Xavier Worthy guy. No, he's not exactly straight X, but, you know, he's a burner. I know Evan doesn't like the burners, but he's proved it.
Oh,
so.
I love the burners. I don't like the, I'm normally not a guy that likes the Keon Coleman types. Like, I need separation at the top of the route. And if you want that, Xavier Worthy's got all that. I think one thing about Xavier Worthy that we have to remember, this is not just a really good combine tester. This is a guy that has great film at Texas on top of the fact that he broke the combine record. I think a lot of people come swooping in towards this time of year and are like, well, what makes this guy different from Tyquan? What makes this guy different from John Ross or some of these other guys that ran really fast? His film at Texas shows legit route running on top of the fact that he runs a 4.21.
Love both the Texas kids, so that's awesome.
Well, there you go. We could talk about receivers all day long, but this is going to be a show about offensive line, so we four of us sat down and
oh, right. Yeah. totally forgot about that.
So check out here our discussion on the offensive line. All right, we're here in the studio and we're going to be talking offensive line today. And guys, this is a big position of need. First, though, I got to welcome in Chris Cassidy, making his debut here on Patriots Draft Countdown. Chris,
how we doing?
Good. You play a little offensive line?
Right? Yeah, a little bit. Right. I dabbled in high school. Not so much in college. So,
you have any eligibility left?
I have 4 years, but I don't think I'm going to be taking that.
Okay.
So, guys, as we get through free agency, at least the initial part, this is a big need on this team, and they didn't really address it with a notable piece, at least when we're recording this right now. So sizable need, maybe not something they could take. But Evan, I'm going to start with you because you have, like you said, there are about nine guys.
I have a list.
All kind of go in the first round. I think you're going to just rattle some of them off. So go
is
ahead.
That what we want me to do? Because it's the easiest way to do this, right? And then we can just talk about the ones that we like. Obviously, at the top you have Olufashanu and or Fashanau. I'm going to get it right. Olufashanu and Joe Alt. Then we go J.C. Latham, Marius Mims from Georgia, Talise Fugawa from Oregon State, Tyler Guyton, Jordan Morgan, Troy Fotnow, Kingsley Suamaitai, Patrick Paul. I would say that 10 right there, or 9, whatever that is the start of the first, I would say, top 50 picks in the draft. You're talking about at least 9 guys in the top 50, maybe 6 in the first round. It's going to be a top-heavy class, but there's a ton of talent at the top.
So we know, like you said, ton of talent at the top, maybe not what the Patriots are going to hit. Maybe we've talked about trading back up into the second round to maybe – or low first round, maybe early second round is where the Patriots already are. But they probably not going to have a chance at those top guys, maybe some of the lesser ones, though, guys. So let's just kind of go around. We've all been doing our studying. We found some guys we like maybe that, like, you know, day two, kind of in that range. Paul – well, what caught your eye here on your extensive offensive
line? I feel like the guy that
chart.
Showed up to the midterm and hasn't been at class all year. you know me in the offensive line. I don't go as in-depth as most, and certainly not anywhere near as in-depth as Evan does. I do love those two guys at the top. And if for whatever, I just want to throw the caveat out there. If for whatever reason they don't love one of the quarterbacks, you know, these two guys, Alton,
Fashanu. That's what we're going with.
Those two guys are outstanding prospects. So that would be the only way you could get them is if you decided to trade down and maybe you end up at 8 or 9 and one of those guys falls in your lap. I do like the Alabama guy. I kind of feel like that's a pretty strong tradition of offensive linemen. They're not without, you know, Alex Leatherwood. And, you know, there's some misses and whatnot, but I do like J.C. Latham. And I felt like the kid from Georgia, Mims, is so ridiculously athletic but doesn't have a lot of playing experience. So that kind of worries me a little bit, and I wonder if that causes him to drop a little bit. A lot of people feel like he's one of those that Evan just mentioned, and maybe because very little real starting experience
in college.
Wow. That's a lot. That, like, he doesn't have anywhere near the amount of snaps that most of these other guys come out of college with. Maybe that helps you. Maybe he drops down in the second round and you can grab him. Doubtful, but I like the athleticism there. That's probably all I got.
Yeah. No, that's not bad. I honestly, Mims, start with him just because you did. 7 career starts. He only has 800 snaps in college under his belt. Some of these guys we're going to talk about over the next couple weeks have 50 career starts in college. So he's someone that is very, very raw, doesn't have a ton of tape. That I definitely think is a profile that typically does project to the early second round. When you start to talk about guys that just have these little red flags here and there, nothing major off the field or anything like that, but hasn't been healthy, didn't really win the starting job early on in his career, that's Mims. His opportunity to start as the full-time starter was last year, and he injured his ankle and had to have tightrope surgery, came back at the end of the year. So he has someone that has all oozing with physical talent. If we're talking about a player that made 50 career starts in college, he's probably a top 10 pick just based off of raw tools and the film that was available, but it's just a very small sample size.
Impressive looking guy.
Yeah. Obviously, Alt is, in my mind, one of the most can't-miss prospects in this draft, if not the most can't-miss prospect in this draft, because of his athleticism and because of his experience and really just a very seasoned tackle prospect, someone that just looks like he's going to walk off the bus and on an NFL field and be a starter right away. He's extremely athletic, great feet, great posture in his stance, great balance, really recognizes things happening in front of him, post-snap movement, things like that. He's awesome to watch. I mean, he's one of those guys that I get all excited about just watching him on film. Fashanu is a little bit more raw, I would say, but his physical tools are immense, but he doesn't necessarily have the technique down as smoothly as Alt does. So he could be someone that would be available in some of those trade-down scenarios that Paul was talking about. I think Alt's floor is probably the 5th or 6th pick in the draft, depending on who makes those picks and where, right, based off of trades.
Before we get Chris going, because I'm curious to hear, you know, some of your different guys, some of the different names. One thing that really stood out to me when watching, like, these top, I watched about the top 8 or 10 of them, really solid, almost every one of them, pass protection is really, really strong. Some of them are not, to me, as good in the run game. And some of these guys, I think, you know, Evan likes to talk about the zone schemes, that maybe they want to be a little bit more athletic and a little bit mobile. Some of these guys have that in their run blocking techniques, a little bit more mobile, but really impressive. I think you look at all these top guys, there's almost like no sacks allowed for any of them.
Yeah, we don't want to get too carried away, because probably Patriots, unless they trade down, probably not going to get these top-ranked guys. But Chris, right, we talked a little bit about some lower-round guys or even, you know, mid-day. Yeah. What do you got? Who stood out to you?
Yeah, no, I looked at about like 7 or so guys. Like, say the Patriots go with a quarterback round one or wide receiver round one, you know, guys that could fall 2nd, 3rd, 4th round even. Just did a little bit of research again. 7 guys. I mean, I looked at the Zach Zinters of the world, Christian Mahoganys, but there were 3 guys that really stood out to me. I mean, those are more interior linemen. You don't really need that necessarily this season. You have to see what Cole Strange can do coming up, but hopefully that'll be something solid. But yeah, 3 guys. One of them Evan already mentioned was Kingsley Sumataye. I mean, he's a big fella. He's 6'4", 326 pounds. You know, he's got great speed. Ran a 504 40-yard dash at the combine. You know,
you should have seen Evan staring at him at the combine. He was just like,
okay. So I'm glad you brought up Kingsley, because that's my guy at 34.
I love him.
So athleticism off the charts. Why cousin Penny Sewell. Yeah. So he has it in his blood, right? And offensive line is one of those positions, and I know we do this in a lot of other instances, like Marvin Harrison Jr. with his dad and Patrick Surtain years ago with his dad. But offensive line is a unique position. And when you have it in your blood, like that is, I love that. I love when
Joe
you,
Walt too.
Yeah, when you just yeah. have that lineage of, I've just grew up with this. You know, I grew up doing pass sets in my backyard. That's what I want to hear from my offensive lineman. And that's what Kingsley was talking about doing with his cousin, with Penny Sewell. And they're very similar body types and very similar athleticism. Maybe not quite as polished as Penny was coming out of college, which is why he's going to go a little bit later than Penny Sewell did. But in terms of body type athleticism, he's actually more athletic than Penny Sewell is from the combine testing. So right. He's got a ways to go with his technique a little bit. But in terms of just raw tools, he's a really good bet.
Yeah, and one of the stats really stuck out to me was in 2022, 361 snaps did not give up one sack. So that's a huge number. I mean, Patriots were one of the highest pressure teams in the league last season. And, I mean, went through two quarterbacks, and you saw both of them go down multiple times. And, I mean, having a protection like that is huge. One other person, I'm going to try my best to pronounce the name, but Kieran Amaj, I thought I got it earlier. Amagaji.
The Yale kid.
Yeah, he's from Yale.
Smart.
I didn't mention, but Kingsley's from BYU, but from Yale. You know, Kieran, another big fella, 6'5", 326 as well. Only one sack allowed in 24 games. Again, good speed on that outside. You can put him really left or right tackle, whatever you want to choose. That's, of course, you want to expect Onwenu to step down to a interior lineman type role. That's more his build. That's what he fits. But want to know what you guys think about him, possibly.
Yeah, you know, I think that the biggest thing when you look at him is obviously the jump up in competition, especially at the offensive line. You want to see a guy that dominates at that level of competition if you're going to draft him early, which you probably are in the third round, you know, top 100 certainly. I saw some dominant streaks, but it wasn't as dominant as maybe some of the other lower level guys I've seen in years past. But he's definitely got the tools. I think one thing that works against him, sometimes those guys that are really, really tall, it kind of works against him in the leverage and pad level situation. Mm-hmm. So he's got to get some more flexibility and be able to get down. But in terms of raw tools, definitely fits the mold, and then you hope it just translates to the next level. I wish I'd seen him at the Senior Bowl, but he either wasn't there or had an injury or something like that. It's tough sometimes to project those guys to the next level, but every once in a while you see a guy that just looks like a man amongst boys at, you know, a lower level Ivy League, D2, whatever it is, and he, I would say, fits that bill.
Yeah. Two more, Chris. You got, who are the other two?
I got one more.
One more.
I got one more. Well, I guess I got two more, but this one, one of my favorite, one of the more, I guess, interesting people that I studied, Javon Foster out of Mizzou.
Mahler.
Again, another big fella, and there's two offensive tackles that are in this upcoming draft that ranked PFF over 80 in both categories, pass blocking and run blocking, and it was Joe Alt and Javon Foster. And those are two huge statistical focuses there, and, you know, somebody with that type of stature and that type of ability could go a long way with this offensive line.
Yes, he was a Senior Bowl guy, definitely a riser on Senior Bowl week, and just a mauler. Yeah, I think, you know, a little bit smaller than I was expecting in terms of weight. He's like 6'5", 320, but reminded me a lot of like a Marcus Cannon type of Patriots right tackle, a little bit more stocky guard build, but definitely has the play strength, and you could see him just getting on double teams with the kid from UConn, who I'm blanking on his name right now, the guard, and those two guys just were moving the line of scrimmage together. Haynes, yeah. And they were really good down there in Mobile. And I look at him, I look at a guy like Christian Jones from Texas too, as maybe guys that could slip into the fourth round there for the Patriots at the top of day three when they're on the clock, as, you know, good prospects at that spot.
I'm going to throw out four Deuces mid-round guys, mostly from the combine, but Tylan Grable was the number one athletic score from UCF. really athletic tackle. You know, developmental guys. Julian Pearl, another one, 35 and an eighth inch arms. Liked him a little bit from Illinois. Good length. Walter Rouse from Oklahoma, another guy, big, got the size. You know, just needs to develop a little bit. And finally, Caden Wallace from Penn State, another highly athletic guy that developmental. You know, and I think that's. I don't know where they're going to land in that like early second round, or you know, late first, maybe if they get somebody in there. But it just feels like a double dip kind of position, and one of these guys who has a lot of athleticism that you could probably at least develop for the future, so you're not getting back into this problem where you have no tackles.
Yeah, I would say the only other ones that we haven't mentioned just quickly, Patrick Paul from Houston is a good second round target for the Patriots. Made 40-45 career starts at left tackle at Houston, so his experience, I'm not sure if he's necessarily going to get significantly better. He's kind of tapped out physically, but definitely someone that could step in and maybe play year one just because of how much college experience he had. Mm-hmm. And then you're really talking about guys that if they did decide to trade back into the back end of the first round, you know, a Tyler Guyton, for example, yep. You know, is he someone that you would want to go up and get? Those types of players are there. You know, Troy Fontenot from Washington, he passed the thresholds for tackles in terms of arm length. That was a question mark with him coming into the combine. Maybe a guy that would be, you know, 20 to 25 range that you could sneak back up in the first round and grab too. So it really is one of those positions that early on, if they want that day one impact starter, they got to jump on the parade. We talk about this all the time because they're just going to go. So once they're off the board and you start getting into some of these other, you know, guys that Deuce mentioned or the Yale kid or whatever, you're starting to get into more developmental guys that are probably not going to be rookie starters.
Yeah, I just wanted to throw, and I don't remember if Evan had this in your list at the beginning, the Duke kid, Barton, more so because I thought he was really – and I'm still sticking into the old Patriots thing, the versatility.
Yeah. Yep.
Played some center, played some left tackle. Not a lot of guys play like interior and then tackle. So, you know, you think Mike Owenu, you know, a guy with some versatility inside out. Not one of the top-rated guys, but maybe a guy on day two.
I put Dominic Puni in there, too, okay. Another guy. Play a bunch of different spots.
Graham Barton is the kid.
Yeah, so Graham Barton projects as a guard at the next level. Yeah. But somebody that could back up a tackle, like almost like a different player than Onwenu, but just same idea that and he could back up
strong in the zone stuff that you like.
Yeah,
could I you know, pin and pull, you know, that kind of stuff.
They'll run some pin pull. You want pin pull, you want zone. I'm telling you, Kingsley Suamaitai is the guy. That guy, you watch him on tape, you watch him get into space, get out of his stance. First step, all that stuff, checks all the boxes.
I look forward to adding that into my word dictionary.
His quickness is just so appealing.
Which part?
Yeah.
Kingsley Suamaitai.
Oh, yeah.
The whole thing.
Yeah. Well, there we go, guys. We did the first positional preview here. Offensive line, a lot of names. Huge need for the Patriots. Now, Evan also had a chance to talk to Brandon Thorne, who gives his expert opinion on a bunch of these guys as well. So trying to cover all the bases here. Check out what Evan and Brandon had to say.
All right, everybody. I'm very excited to join, be joined by, there we go. All right, been a long day. Be joined by Brandon Thorne. He writes for Trench Warfare. Give him a subscription on there. And also Bleacher Report. And Brandon, I use your Bleacher Report scouting reports all the time on the offensive line. I always love looking at your insight and your rankings and everything like that. So that's a great resource. All you got to do is Google Joe Alt, Bleacher Report, Joe Alt, Brandon Thorne, and his full scouting report will pop right up on your screen for you to read about these guys. And you know way more about all these technical terms and things like that than I do. So it's a lot of fun to read those. So thanks so much for doing this, and happy to have you here.
Yeah, man, I'm always happy to talk with you, and excited to be here. So thanks for inviting me.
No problem. I talked to you at the combine briefly, and I probably kept you for a little bit too long just asking you questions about every single Patriots offensive lineman and where they fit on the roster. So I did want to start really quickly off the top. They obviously re-signed Mike Onwenu, big move for them this offseason in free agency. Where do you see him fitting into this equation in the Alex Van Pelt offense? There's a lot of conversations about if he fits at tackle in a more zone-based scheme.
Yeah, I mean, I just think even kind of regardless of scheme, I know there's probably some nuances there, you know, to where he's a little bit better fit at this position in that scheme. But just generally, I think at right guard is the spot that you want to put him in pretty much all schemes. And you'll probably get at the end of the day, the best version of him. You know, we talked about this at the combine, and I think his contract kind of alludes to more of a guard as well, based on, you know, kind of what I know. At least I'm not a contract expert, but just the fact that he can do both, though, is, you know, extremely valuable, and it just adds flexibility to how you build stuff out. And then if stuff goes wrong with injuries or whatever, you know, you have a guy like that, it's, you know, just adds to his value. But I think when you watch his film over the last several years, you know, it's with a highlight on last year in particular, he's clearly better at guard than tackle. And that stems from pass protection, you know, where I guess in a Van Pelt scheme, maybe that could be mitigated to a degree with, you know, whether it's RPOs or play action, you know, being a run first offense, things like that. But on an island, you know, the range or lack thereof to protect the corner against, you know, high side rushes from wide alignments from good or better players, I mean, it's just shaky. So you can kind of mitigate that a little bit inside and get the best of him, and allow his play strength and his size and his power, you know, to really shine. And I just think it's interesting because CD So, you know, is there, and I thought him and So in the run game with Onwenu at tackle, you know, that was awesome. But pass pro with both of them, you know, was shaky, understandably so. It's So being a rookie, you know, day three pick. But now that you got a core four in there, it tells me, you know, maybe they are thinking more guard. So I don't know. It's still kind of up in the air, and there's variables there. But, you know, I like the depth on the interior, I think, overall, though, too.
Yeah, I would get into a core four, but we really do want to focus on the draft specifically on this show. So I'll get into some of the draft guys, and just start at the top. I obviously love Joe Alt. I think we all can see the talent there. It's not maybe the most popular pick among Patriots fans to take a tackle early on in the draft over a quarterback or Marvin Harrison Jr. or something like that. But what makes Joe Alt such a great prospect in your mind?
Yeah, just to, you know, piggyback on that, I think ideally you trade down and draft Joe Alt. But yeah, if you do pick him at three, I mean, I still think, yeah, the part that makes him you know, so appealing is, I think you look at the fact that he is so young, you know, he's like a month or two younger than even Olu, you know, Fashanu from Penn State, who's considered a very young player. So I think they both turned just 21 or about to turn 21. So they're going to be 21 for the duration of the rookie year. And the fact that he is so young and so polished with his technique, specifically as a run blocker, that's the thing when you watch his film that really jumped out to me. For a guy being almost 6'9", you know, a legit 6'8", you know, 320 plus, the leverage that he plays with in the run game is just tremendous. Like, he's a Notre Dame offensive lineman personified. It's just, he's 6'8", with long arms and really athletic. And, you know, I just, so I love that he has that part of his game that is really going to, I think, create a high floor for him as a player. And then the pass pro, the traits are certainly there. I mean, he's good too. He's productive as a pass protector in terms of blocking guys with good technique and, you know, having the athletic ability to certainly do it. Not the most powerful guy, you know, that is in the draft or, you know, anything like that. He plays a lot like Jake Matthews, but he's in like Nate Solder's body. That's kind of like what I've seen from him, you know, since I wrote his report, you know, in December or whatever it was. So, yeah, I think he kind of confirmed that he tests very similarly to Nate Solder coming out of Colorado. It's just, I think he's a higher quality prospect than he was. And, you know, I just, yeah, it's tough to poke holes in his game aside from saying that he's not the most powerful guy.
Yeah, you mentioned Nate Solder. Obviously, everybody here is familiar with Nate Solder's game. And the one thing I remember talking to Skarnecki and some of the coaches about with Nate Solder is that he was honestly almost too tall, where, you know, his lower half wasn't flexible enough, and sometimes leverage and stuff like that was an issue. But you just kind of perfectly said about how that's not really a concern with Joe Alt because of how flexible he is in his lowers to be able to get down and create leverage.
Yeah, that's the part that impressed me more than anything watching him on film. I mean, I was pretty floored by his run blocking on film, because when you see him in his stance on film, you could tell he's huge. He's just an enormous dude. So typically those guys, when they get out of their stance, especially post-contact in the second, third, fourth phase of the run block, the pads just rise and they gradually lose leverage. They get to spots quick, but then in terms of sustaining and finishing, it gets real dicey really quickly. But for him, his ability to keep his pads down, you know, bend at the ankles, knees, and hips, sustain, move his feet. He has a good feel, you know, for body positioning on blocks, and he plays a great effort. He's a great finisher. So his ability to sustain and finish run blocks at a guy his size is really, I think, the most rare part of his evaluation, like what he offers, you know. And so, yeah, it's quite a bit different than Nate Solder, you know, in how it manifests on the field, you know, their skill set.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Before we move on to the day two guys, just quickly, it probably won't be the Patriots that take Olufoshinu, but maybe in a trade down scenario or something like that, it ends up being more of a conversation. You know, let's say they trade with, you know, someone like at 11, the Minnesota Vikings, for example, or something, maybe more Fashanu's range. What do you see with him? Is he as pro ready to you as Alt is? And you know, do you think that both those guys are plug and play day one franchise left tackles?
I do think that Olu is a plug and play starter. You know, I gave him a grade that suggests he's a, you know, a really good starter right away. Now, you know, in terms of being as pro ready or polished as Joe Walt, I don't think that's the case. And so, you know, with Olu, like, I think the thing that his kind of trump card, you know, if you will, as a prospect is his pass protection ability and just how natural his movements are in pass protection, getting out of his stance, mirroring guys, recovering, anchoring, utilizing his length in a really nice way with independent hands. And you saw that 2 years ago when he stepped onto the field for the first time in college and just how natural he was. And that pretty much carried through for all 21 or whatever starts that he had. Aside from the Ohio State game this year, you really can't poke many holes in his game as a pass protector aside from that one tape, because I've pretty much watched them all, and I think that's the case. Now, run blocking is a different story. He's much more raw there than Joe Alt, although you did see progress this year after that Ohio State game in particular. The rest of the season were his best tapes as a run blocker. He really kind of flipped a switch after that game. And I remember talking to him about it a little bit as well during the time, because I had a question about a clip against Ohio State that he, you know, answered for me. And he basically said, like, you know, yeah, I know that was my worst game. And, you know, he was highly motivated to correct that. And he did. So just the fact that he, and what I mean by that is a run blocker, like his ability to, or struggles to sustain and finish blocks, letting guys get off of him a little early, cross his face and just kind of fall off stuff a little prematurely. That was kind of prevalent throughout his career, I thought. And you just always wanted a little bit more physicality and just control from him. But then, like I said, after that game, he showed it. So that was really encouraging to me. That there's just the fact that you could see it. Now it does need to be more consistent and things like that. But yeah, it's kind of an inverse thing. Like Joe Walt, you're getting a really, really polished high-end run blocker and a good pass protector. And then Olu, I think you're getting a really, really polished pass protector and maybe like a below average to average run blocker. But again, they're so young and all that. I would expect those things to improve, you know, at least a little bit. So.
Yeah, yeah, two really good prospects there. I'm going to skip over a group that I feel like is in a weird spot for the Patriots, you know, the Talisa Fugawas, the J.C. Lathams, like those guys probably going to go somewhere in between the Patriots' two picks. So let's go to the top of day two at 34, which is they take a quarterback at three, then 34 is probably the pick that's going to be earmarked for a tackle, one would think. Who are some of the guys that, A, you could see falling to that spot, but B, more importantly, that you like on film?
Yeah. So Latham would be my tackle three. My tackle four is Marius Mims. You know, so I'd assume those guys are gone. And then, you know, five and six, Tyler Guyton and Kingsley Suamatia from BYU. Guyton's probably gone. Suamatia there, I would say it probably starts at Suamatia as a guy who could potentially be there at your pick at 34. So he's a guy I do like. I mean, I gave him, potential impact starter. So like a low end second round pick. I'm sure, you know, that's going to get a bump as tackles do. He's going to probably be a late first round pick. But there is just more of this sort of rawness that we've spoke about, but it's pretty much in all areas of his game, I think, as opposed to just one. There's a lot to work with there in terms of physical traits, height, weight, length, frame, build, athletic ability, the way he moves. It's natural for him. You could tell he's a former five-star recruit. You know, he's cousins with Penei Sewell and trains with him. And, you know, chances are he's going to develop at least into a solid starter. If not, you know, he could potentially be really good. Who knows? But he came out as a redshirt sophomore. You know, so he's just young and raw. But it'll be really interesting to see. So he's one guy that I would say would be available and actually kind of have value at that pick. After that, I mean, I have a lot of tackles that are kind of projected inside, but could play inside that could be available there. The first one that comes to mind is probably Jordan Morgan, from Arizona, who's, you know, he's a big, strong guy. Came back from a torn ACL really quickly this past year, less than a year, I think like 9 months, and he started the whole year, which was impressive. But he has kind of a reoccurring issue in pass protection that leads me to believe that it'd probably be best that he kicks inside, although I'm sure and I've heard teams are going to view him as a tackle. You know, those two guys, if I had to bet top of the second round to play tackle, Jordan Morgan and Kingsley Suamutia would probably be my best bets there.
What do you think about Patrick Paul from Houston? Because I feel like he's always projected a little bit after those two guys that you mentioned, but a little bit before the next wave of guys is sort of that tweener on day two.
Yeah, so I have more of a third round grade on Patrick Paul, but certainly, like, you know, traits wise, you got to start there. You know, he's you know, 6'7", 6'8", I think 6'7", like 330, 320, 330. You know, elite length, you know, 36 plus inch arms. And he's really strong, actually, when he actually gets his hands inside. But that's the problem. He struggles to kind of get his hands inside of guys. He's very wide and kind of a little, you know, I don't want to say lazy, but just inconsistent with his hand placement, I think is probably the best term. And that just creates a lot of leverage issues, guys getting inside of him. You know, driving him back. You saw it at Senior Bowl one-on-ones, but you see it on tape all over the place. I mean, it's just, it's up and down. But you love the size, you love the strength. And the thing that I probably like most about him that's kind of most surprising with the guy with his, all that stuff I just said, is his competitive toughness is very, very good. He's physical tone setter, and you don't get that a lot at tackle, you know, I don't think, especially left. So, you know, I think he's a better prospect than his brother was coming out of Tulsa a couple of years ago, Chris Paul. And, you know, he's working with Duke Mannyweather at OL Masterminds, which is encouraging because most of his issues are technique based. I think it would be a little bit of a reach there, but I think he could feasibly go there. You know, I think that's definitely possible.
Yeah. So before I let you go, just some day three sleepers. A couple guys, you know, from the Senior Bowl, Christian Jones, Javon Foster might be, you know, early day three if they do slip into day three. Those are two guys that caught my mind, but you go, you know, a lot deeper than I do. So are any sleepers that you like on day three for the Pats?
Okay, day three. So we'll assume that Roger Rosengart and Blake Fisher are gone. Yeah, after them, yeah, Javon Foster, you get into that. The print there, the Yale kid, is intriguing as a day three guy to me. Caden Wallace, maybe, you know. These guys, you know, if I had to pick a favorite pure tackle out of those guys, it would definitely be Javon Foster. That's because of, first, I think the improvement that he showed from 2022 to 2023, because I watched him last year thinking he could potentially come out, and I just, you know, I'm glad he went back. And I thought he played with a lot more control this year. He's not as kind of wild, and, you know, he's a heavy two-hand strike guy in pass protection. He tries to kind of kill guys with his punch, and that can get him into trouble. He kind of reeled that back a little bit, played with more patience. So for him to show that was nice. And then, you know, had a really nice Senior Bowl as well.
Yeah.
Not perfect, but, you know, good. And, you know, I just think he's also a guy, a traits guy for sure, in terms of, you know, height, weight, build, length. I would say athletic ability with him is, you know, maybe like solid, you know, to good. Not a bad athlete, not a great athlete, but good. He's coming from a heavy RPO system at Missouri, which, you know, kind of protected him a little bit in pass protection, which wouldn't be an issue if he's doing that in the pros. But he's that's why he's a day three guy, because you just don't feel great relying on him. But yeah, if you're picking a guy in day three, he kind of reminds me of Sean Coleman coming out of years back from Auburn. He's that kind of guy who he has starter level size, length, and athletic ability, but you're going to need to be patient there. And, you know, ideally he's part of a rotation.
Yeah, definitely somebody that Senior Bowl riser columns all over the place after Mobile, people mover. Yeah. That's what I noticed about him was his play strength, and did a great job on those double team blocks and things like that in those drills.
Yeah, yeah, he has power at the point of attack for sure. It's just after the fact, if guys challenge him, he gets out leveraged pretty quickly, and he's kind of late to adjust. He overextends. His body control isn't great. But yeah, I mean, double teams is a great opportunity to just unload on somebody with help and not have to rely on. It's more about immediate displacement as opposed to, you know, a base block, you know, where, you know, it's a lot different in terms of, you know, after the point of attack. So, yeah, there's certain areas where, you know, I think he has a lot of appeal and could help right away. It's just, you know, he just needs some work, you know, with technique.
Yeah, absolutely. He's Brandon Thorne, as you can tell, knows everything there is to know about the offensive line and offensive line guru. You can find him at Trench Warfare. Please subscribe there to read Brandon's stuff. He does free agency. He does the draft. A lot of great write-ups on all these guys. And obviously on Bleacher Report, you can read his scouting reports on all the draft prospects in the 2024 NFL Draft. Thanks for joining us, Brandon.
Yeah, happy to do it, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Patriots Draft Countdown. We'll be back next week. It's going to be a busy week for us. Evan, you're heading out to do some pro days. He's going to get an up-close look at both UNC and Georgia. Right, LSU. Apologize. I'm going to be at the owners' meeting, so we'll see maybe if some deals get done. So we'll be back next week, though, taking a look at the secondary. And don't worry, Paul will be here. He's got you covered.